correlations.
So yeah, thank you all for coming here, even though it's a strange hour for quantum information talk. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this work. So it's work I've been done in collaboration with Marco Piani at IPC and Pavel Horodetsky at the Technical University of Gdansk. Okay, as you see, the title is Quantifying Quantumness of Correlations Beyond Entanglement and Maybe on the Way Back. We haven't come back completely yet. So why are we studying these sort of things? Well, in principle, it is in general an important idea to analyze the features that allows us to distinguish between the quantum and the classical world. This is important both from a fundamental point of view and also in principle from a practical one. Yeah. Well, we also know that in general, quantum correlations are stronger than classical ones, such as entanglement and the breaking of violation of Bernoulli product, for example. Well, what we might ask ourselves is if there is more than just entanglement in the quantumness of correlations, and well, and also in what sense are we actually asking ourselves this question? So I'll try to give you an idea of why there is actually, well, we believe that there is actually more than just entanglement. So first of all, okay, this is a brave question. What makes quantum correlations really quantum? First, I'll say, well, what we mean by correlations and introduce the concept of neutral information, which then we will use for the rest of the talk, and see how there is, well, can sort of build up a finer the distinction between among the set of separable states. And there are, we'll define other states that we'll call QQ, well, CC and CQ. And then what we aim at doing is at giving actually an operative characterization of the concept of quantumness. And this will be given by means of a task, which is local broadcasting, which is a sort of a variation on the more commonly known task of broadcasting. And we're sure that there is actually no local broadcasting theorem for quantum correlations. Okay, and then from quantumness, as promised, we'll try to go back to entanglement, or we end back to entanglement, by first defining a measure of non-classicality, so here we're still away from entanglement, and then showing how, from this measure, we can actually derive a new quantity, which ends up being a sort of candidate entanglement measure. Okay, and then conclusions and a bunch of open questions. So, correlations. Well, in order to define what we are talking, well, what correlations are, we'll talk about what a non-correlated state is, which is easier. From a operational point of view, an uncorrelated state is such that the expectation value of this operator is just the product of the two expectation values. Well, if you look at it from a structural point of view, we'll just say an uncorrelated state is just going to be a factorized state. Now, if we want to measure these correlations, we actually have to impose some reasonable requirements on a quantity that could measure them. So the first of it, well, is the standard. We're just asking that a measure of correlation is greater or equal to zero. The second requirement is that, well, since this state is supposed to be uncorrelated, we want our measure of correlation to be zero on factorized states. And finally, we want that local operations do not increase correlations. Indeed, the idea is that if I do something on my system, I'm not going to increase the correlations that I have between my system and yours. Okay, so among various possibilities, what we're going to study is quantum mutual information. Now, quantum mutual information is defined in this way, where S is the phenomenon entropy of a state, and it does indeed satisfy the two axioms. So this derives by the basic properties of the entropy, and, well, this one. So, basic remarks on quantum mutual information. In principle, well, one could try to choose some other quantity, but indeed quantum mutual information has sort of a bunch of advantages, and it's quite well known in the field of quantum information theory. So first of all, quantum mutual information ends up being a natural generalization of the classical mutual information. If you see, this is the quantum mutual information as defined in the previous slide, this is the classical mutual information of a probability distribution, and it's just trivial correspondence where H now is the Shannon entropy. Classical mutual information allows for a sort of very easy interpretation, and I'll do it in a sort of pictorial way.
as you all know, see this blue oval is the information you have about system A. And the red oval is the system, the information you have about system B. Well, the mutual information is the information is given by this supposedly big pink set, and is the information that is shared among the two systems. So just a few remarks about why actually I'm saying mutual information as well has plenty of application in quantum information theory. Well, for example, let's start from this case. Let's suppose we have many copies of a quantum state. Now, it has been shown that by applying random unitaries of this form, it is actually possible to transform this tensor product state of entangled states into a factorized state. So sometimes it is possible to destroy the correlation by means of one random unitary. What happens is that asymptotically, the number of bits of randomness per copy that are necessary and sufficient to destroy completely the correlations are given exactly by the mutual information of the quantum state row. So in this sense, it's sort of a natural measure of the correlations contained in a state. Also, quantum mutual information has applications in the field of the study of capacity of quantum channels. In particular, one can consider this scenario. You have a sender A and a receiver B, and they share a quantum channel given by a CPT map. Now, suppose that Alice has a classical input message she wants to send to Bob. In order to do this, she'll first have to encode the classical input into a quantum state, then send the state through the channel, and finally, Bob will have to decode. Now, what we'll be looking at is a slight variation, well, not so slight, in which the Alice and Bob have an additional resource aside from the quantum channel, that is, they share infinite entanglement. In this case, one can ask, as usual, what is the capacity of the channel? And one finds that the entanglement that system, in the sense of the shared entanglement capacity of this channel, is given by the mutual information of this state, where psi, well, where you are minimizing over the trace of your pure, in some pure state, really, psi. Now, okay. So mutual information is sort of useful, and now we'll see how you can actually apply it to the idea of defining the quantumness of a state, quantifying the quantumness of a state. So let's start with, again, a factorized state, which we know is uncorrelated. And if we look at the preparation of such a state, it's indeed obvious that it can be prepared locally without any communication at all. Alice prepares row A, Bob prepares row B, and then the sort. But indeed, a general separable state has classical correlations. And if we look at the preparation of a separable state, these classical correlations can be explained in terms of classical communication. How do we do this? Well, indeed, we can imagine the preparation of a separable state, dividing it in two parts. In the first part, we have a distribution of correlations. So we have some source, which outputs indices I and J to Alice and Bob respectively, according to some probability distribution. And then there is a second phase, which is local preparation. Now, if we had just assumed the local preparation part and no distribution of correlations, we would necessarily have an uncorrelated factorized state. But in this case, we can reasonably assume that Alice and Bob will prepare different states depending on the index they have received. Indeed, the final state is a separable state of this form. Notice, though, that while we have explained what happens if we only consider the local preparation part, we could also consider what happens if we just stop before the distribution of correlation, before the local preparation. So we just distribute correlations. In this case here, Alice and Bob just have some sort of classical indices corresponding to the probability distribution. But we can imagine to embed this information into a sort of quantum formalism and we obtain a state of this form, which is, we can imagine it to be this quantum state of a classical register. Okay, so from this consideration, so that there is sort of a difference between separable states and states of this form, which don't really even require any local preparation procedure, we build up a sort of hierarchy of correlations. Okay, this is the set of quantum states. And as you all know, the set of separable states is a convex subset of the set of whole states. Separable states are in general states of this form, and states outside the set of separable states are entangled and cannot be written as a sum of factorized. Indeed, within the set of separable states, we can distinguish, though, another particular class of states, which is analogous to the ones we've just seen in the previous slide, so this quantum state of a classical register. As you see, this is simply a classical joint probability distribution, which is sort of embedded in a quantum formalism by adding orthogonal orthonormal flags. Just I and J will be some orthonormal, by orthonormal basis. So there's no reason to believe that state to be quantum, because there's really nothing outside really putting some labels here and there. Okay. A lot has been done in studying the difference between entangled state and separable states. We know that there are operational distinctions. We have entangled state Bell inequalities. We have, I don't know, applications to QKD, a bunch of different things. And also, the quantification of entanglement has been a major field of study. We have a plethora of entanglement measures in literature. So what about here? So what we'll try to address is actually this distinction. So is there an operational characterization that allows us to distinguish between, you know, these really classical states, that is what CC stands for, and these, you know, normal separable states? And can we actually quantify this non-classicality, or is it just something hand-waving? Okay, so as we've seen before, there is something more to the set of separable states than saying simply, okay, they are separable. Indeed, we have seen that we can define a set of CC states which have this form. Now, what is the particular property of this state? So let's do it in a pictorial way. So what we know of these states is that I can always find a bi-orthonormal basis, which is here represented by rows and columns in a grid, such that these states here only have elements in the diagonal of this table. On the opposite, if I consider a general separable state, in principle, for any orthonormal basis I find, I will need some to occupy all the elements of this grid. In principle, one can distinguish another kind of state, which we call CQ state, which is classical quantum, which is sort of classical in one of the two parties. They're just classical labels. And quantum in the second part.
Yeah. I'm looking for
any product.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, sure.
And you mean that the basis on each side is an orthonormal basis?
Yes.
So it's not like, you know, the
number. No, it must be orthonormal. Yeah. That's actually, if you see it here, you're really asking that each of the two subsystems are making an orthonormal basis, so that you can really think about classical local labels. Okay, these CQ states are just something in between. We have classical labels on one side, classical register on one side, and a quantum state on the other. And of course, they are somewhere in between. Both of these states are clearly non-convex. That's why the picture is only the case. Okay, and these guys sort of live in a block diagonal part of this. Okay, now let's go to this operative characterization I've been talking about. And in order to do this, I have to introduce the task of broadcasting. What's broadcasting about? Well, we have state row A, and then I'll say that the new state row tilde A prime is a broadcast state of row A if it satisfies the condition that its reduced density matrices coincide with the initial state. That is, I have this big state of two systems, but whenever I throw away one of the two parties, I end up with the center one for the beginning. And this happens in both cases. Now, this is just what we mean by broadcasting. What do we mean by standard broadcasting, which is sort of a task that has been studied a lot in the past. So, in this case, we have one single system, A, as we have here, And we consider a set of many states. And what we're asking is, well, we'll say that the state, the set of these states can be broadcast. If there is one map that goes from A to AA prime, so that for each of these states, the image of the map on this, the image of the map on the state is a broadcast state for the radar. So, okay, I don't see. Okay. So the idea is that we have some set of states that live on A, and you want one map that acting on each of these gives me some big state. But this must, for each of these, this guy must be a broadcast state. Now you're asking that it does the same map does the game for all these states. Well, what happens is that there is a well-known result, especially for precedence, that is the no broadcasting theorem, and that means that that says that broadcasting in this sense of a set of row IA is possible if and only if all the density matrices commute. So in some sense, we are talking about a classical set that can be locally broadcast. That can be broadcast. Okay. Now we're going to take this classical broadcasting and change it a little. In particular, we'll consider the concept of local broadcasting. How is it different? In this case, we have two different systems, A and B, but only one state. And we'll be looking at broadcast states of the state A and B. So we have this big broadcast state, in principle these wiggly lines of entanglement, and you know there can be entanglement everywhere. But you want that tracing of one of the two subsystems gives you as a reduced density matrix the initial state we're ready. And of course the same if we trace out here for two subsystems. Okay, definition. We'll say that a state row is locally broadcastable. If there is a map lambda A and two maps lambda A and lambda B, local, such that the image of the tensor product of the two maps on row A is a broadcast state, which means we start from row AB over there, and we look for two local maps, lambda A and lambda B, such that the image of row AB under the action of the product of these two maps, which is this huge state, must be a broadcast state for row. So, as above, I just
cross out and I want the remaining systems to be in the right state. Yep.
Prediction and broadcastability, right? In other words, anything that is locally broadcastable is automatically broadcastable.
Well, locally broadcastable is on a single state. Broadcastability is on set of states. So it's not so straightforward. In principle, it should be possible to reproduce some of the results here to from them to derive the no broadcasting theorem, but it's not just straightforward because you're just looking at two different paths. You don't have a set of states here, you're just happy with one.
The single state row AB, if I look at just A, it's kind of like an ensemble of states for B, for A conditional on the state of B, or?
Okay, I think so, if I'm not lost.
Okay.
Okay, so the general idea is, okay, what happens if I'm only allowed, instead of having a lot of states and being able to do whatever I want on them, I have only one, but I'm forced to only do the preparations. So it's sort of two different ways to weaken, you know, the thing. What actually happens is that you can derive a condition for local broadcastability. And in order to do this, we actually need a couple of levels. The first one is a corollary of a theorem by Pitts, which says that, well, if two states are such that one can be, one is the image of the local operation on the other one, then, and here the mutual information comes out again, the two quantum mutual informations coincide, if and only if it's possible to go backwards
by a local operation. No, this is in general for two local maps. It's not related to the lambda. Okay, I'm using the same letters. I'm sorry. Just given if you have any two local maps, that acts on a state and give you the other one, whatever these two maps do, then this condition is satisfied if and only if there are other two maps that bring you back. So in one sense, it's sort of clear because you have that mutual quantum mutual information decreases under local operations. So if you have to go by both sides, it must be equal, and also the other.
Not the conjugate maps to the
original. But not was running out of hubris letters and okay. The other theorem again now does refer to local broadcastability. And you find that row V is locally broadcastable if and only if there exists at least one broadcast state that has the same mutual information as your initial state. So in one sense, it derives mainly by the fact that quantum mutual information decreases under local operation. Yes.
When you write the mutual information here, it's between what pair of subsystems?
A prime, B prime.
Okay.
You're considering the correlations. So we're always going to be considering the correlation between the various systems in A.
Right.
And the various systems in B. We're going to do it all the time. So whatever happens here, we don't care, but we will be interested in where the correlations cross the A and B.
So I take it then that it is possible that there can exist a broadcast state that doesn't have.
Yeah. In that case, though, it wouldn't be locally broadcastable. Because if you get to in one sense, you're going to be increasing the mutual information. So in general, broadcast states exist.
Right.
Indeed, when you think about broadcastability, the standard broadcastability, you're not excluding that for a single state you can broadcast that actually you can. You just can't do it for a set of them. So in general, you will have broadcast states, but in general, a broadcast state will have mutual information greater than the mutual information of the final state. So it's just like you can increase correlation when you have. The problem is that local broadcastability doesn't allow you to increase correlations. This is the main idea of this. So what happens is that you can actually derive an infinite, a necessary and sufficient condition for local broadcastability, which is back to quantities now. Because you can find that only states of RCC, so these states that are actually really a quantum encoding of a classical probability distribution can be locally broadcast. So it's also probability the issue, you can't locally broadcast a standard separable state unless it has very particular properties. Okay, this implies, if you think about the previous lemma, that this expression is equal to zero only if rho is CC. What is this expression? This is the mutual information of rho. And this is the minimum mutual information of a broadcast state of rho. This all follows trivially. But this quantity, we're going to use it, so I'll just keep it around as a high field or two. So maybe you can just write it up so we can do that. Yes? There's a 2 over there simply because you are considering broadcasting from one copy to the other copy. So in particular, we'll be looking at the difference between the side here, the 2, and the mutual information of the state. Why are we interested in that? Well, because it's of course 0 for all CC states, but since this is an SPN sufficient condition, it's going to be non-zero for all states that exhibit some sort of quantumness, including a bunch of separable states. Okay, clearly you can see that this thing is greater equal than zero and it's unbounded by the mutual information of rho, which is saying that the mutual information of a copy broadcast state is at most twice the initial mutual information. Okay, now just go back a couple of slides. We have seen that by means of local operations alone, you can transform a CC state into a non-CC one. Actually, if you remember, we're sort of preparing a separable state and say, okay, we just check relations and get a CC state. And then each of the people, each of the two parties applies an open line.
I'm sorry, I just don't understand your definition here. I2 is what? It's the min over all broadcast state of row?
Yeah.
But we're talking about states that can't be locally broadcasted, aren't we?
No. This is over all possible broadcast states of row. What happens is that the equality is row can be locally broadcast. Okay. So you actually have to consider all possible broadcasting, and then you just check. If the two things are equal, then you actually have a CC state, a state that can be locally broadcast. In all other cases, this thing is going to be strictly greater than the mutual information of the initial state row.
Well, in all other cases, so we have a broadcastable state.
All states can be broadcast.
In which case, we have a tensor product.
Oh.
A broadcast state for row.
Yes. Okay.
Is always this.
Okay. So rows of BS doesn't mean rows of LBS.
No. Just means broadcast. In some cases, you're going to have to take the tensor product.
How hard is that computation?
In general, it's hard. I'll show some examples. It depends. In some class, for some classes of states, it's actually easy.
Sure.
For some, it's going to be hard.
Okay.
So we're just seeing here that actually local approach is doing these quantumness. So they're really different from the quantum. It's not. But not quite. Okay. Easy examples. The other ones are harder. Well, trivial CC states. We've just seen them until now. You know, a possible broadcast state is just a cloning of the ordinal basis. And then it's trivial that these two mutual informations are the same. Okay, this is where we started from, so it's no surprise. Another reason why you think is when the state is pure, and this is easy because you can prove that the optimal for any broadcast state has to be of the form tensor product. So in this case, it's easy to compute in principle, in practice, you can actually prove that it consists to four times the entanglement of formation of the side. So, define as the phrase of the reduced density matrix. So there is some sort of relationship that is pure state, but the direct point between, you know, this mutual information and entanglement and this ideal that you. So, whenever you have a pure state, then you actually have that the difference between I tilde 2 and the initial one coincides with I rho, which is actually maximum. Everything else is in the middle. Okay. Another easy and the last easy example we build up for the moment. It's a univocally distinguishable mixer. What we have is, well, something more interesting, you have a mixed state, which is not trivially CC. But you have an additional condition, that is that Alice, by means of local projectors, can distinguish among the states in the mixture. Why is this very useful? Well, we'll see it in the following, but the idea is that it sort of allows you to discriminate where you are, the supervised populations. Okay, the mutual information of row, it ends up, you can easily see it, it's just using the fact that local information decreases under local projections, and that you have to kind of local projector around. And it ends up being the entanglement of formation of this initial state plus the entropy of the reduced density matrix. Okay. But the advantage of having locally distinguishable mixtures is that you actually can prove how the optimal broadcast state has to be. And this is really, you can prove it by means of showing that, well, if you apply local projectors here and there, you sort of force the unwanted terms out of the way. And so you end up having an optimal broadcast state of this form where the psi i's and the j's are exactly the ones that appear. Yep.
When you define optimal broadcast state, does that mean the broadcast state with the lowest i2?
Okay, it's the third class state with the lowest I over 2 is going to be of this form.
Okay.
Not all states of this form are going to be optimal, but you're sort of reducing your problems a lot.
Sure, but I'm just checking that the definition of optimal is minimal.
Yeah, sorry. So what happens is that you can prove that I over 2 of rho is going to be given by twice the complement of formation of rho plus a minimum of the entropy of the reduced density matrix over states of this form here. This is sort of gives some advantages. One among all is that you're only minimizing over a sort of a probability distribution. You don't have to really go over. Okay, I've lost it. Well, this is always more important, 4 times the entanglement of formation of rho. Okay. Special case. So that's sort of an analytic formula, but it's still weird to see how things go around. So we'll consider a more special case. In this case, we have a mixture of 2 terms, each with equal weights. And we assume that these 2 terms have a particular structure, okay? This psi 0 is something like this. And psi 1 is obtained from psi 0 by applying local operations. A rotation on one of the 2 systems and sort of a lateral operation on the other. So this guarantees the fact that they're going to be locally distinguishable because the output of this operation here is still going to be orthogonal to the corresponding state over there. And this is going to mix up things on the so you're going to expect dependences on theta. Okay. Okay, in this case, it's simpler, so you can simplify the expression further. And again, you find that the I to the 2 of rho in this case is given a twice the entanglement of formation of rho plus the entropy of this matrix. Now, this is sort of computable. Much easier, much more easily than in the other case. And this is actually greater than the 4 times the entanglement of formation of rho, not the previous.
Sorry? Just a question about that. I'm sort of trying to understand the motivation because you have a 4-dimensional system and a 2-dimensional system. Can I think of the 4-dimensional system as being 2 qubits? Because I noticed you've got additional plus 2.
Yeah, the idea is that you want to keep, in this case you can take it easier, you just want to keep the states in the A subsystem to remain locally orthogonal. So you have a 0 and a 1 over there, and you want to transform them into a 2 and a 3.
Right.
So you would try to get your state size 0, you can fix it, and then some rotation of the state size 0 to obtain a general state size 1. But then you want to propose that it's locally orthogonal. And okay, I'm not sure this is the only way, but it's sort of an easy one, and it allows you calculations quite easily. And still, you'll see that the fact that you have 2 parameters, mu and theta, that you can vary, allows you to see a very different behaviors. Notice that mu determines the entanglement of psi 0 and also the entanglement of rho, which are different sides of the entanglement. So, pictures, just to see. Now, okay, I'll just write down about these guys again. Again, mu, which is on this axis, is sort of a parameter regulating entanglement, and theta, which is on this axis. Do you see the black axis? Which is theta is over here. And so you can see that, well, as I said, that I2 of rho is always strictly, well, almost always strictly greater than I of rho. Since we have strange behavior here, we'll see it better later. And okay, this is delta 2. You don't see that much on the 3-dimensional slide. So let's go to sections. Okay. These are sections that fix mu. Mu grows as you go up. So this line is for mu equals 0. And then you have growing values of mu. As you can see, as mu grows, that is, the state becomes more and more entangled, the 2 parameters of correlations sort of seem to be independent of the angle theta. So theta, if you remember, was this second part that sort of determined how non-orthogonal were the part of states in the B subsystem. And sort of, it seems to become irrelevant when you have a very highly entangled state. And you can actually see that when you are increasing mu, the reduced density matrix goes to identity, so it sort of forgets what theta is. Okay, this is delta. You can see it quite clearly that as mu goes up, you're actually reaching the point, going towards the point in which the difference delta 2 goes to I of O, so to the maximum. Notice that the state never becomes pure. It's just starting to increase quickly. Okay, this is probably more interesting. It's the cut when mu is equal to 0. So when mu is equal to 0, the state is separable. In this case, you can see that I of rho and I tilde of rho coincide in 2 points. Here is when theta is equal to 0, too. So if the theta changes the B subsystem, so in this case, you just have a factorized state, because the B subsystem remains the same. And so you have the state is uncorrelated. So I of rho is equal to I tilde of rho is equal to 0. The other interesting case is when theta is equal to plus or minus by half. And in this case, you can, see that the state is actually CC. So we're expecting the delta is equal to 0. But in all other points, delta is definitely non-zero. So you can clearly see that even in this simple class of states, a separable state shows some quantumness as quantified by this parameter. Okay, now we'll consider the case where we were broadcasting from one system to two systems while stopped there. So what is special about two copies? And indeed, we can define n-copy broadcasting in this way. So n-copy broadcast state is that if I trace out all subsystems except one, I still obtain my initial state. And then you can just proceed as we did in the copy case and define some I tilde n of rho and delta tilde n of rho. There's no reason to believe, well, these guys will still measure quantumness in different ways. The only bad thing, is that if I consider delta tilde n of psi, well, delta tilde n in pure state is going to blow up with n and go to infinity as n goes to infinity. So, well, it sort of comes natural to consider some regularized versions of them and just normalize over n. It's not meaningful that the difference blows up just because of increasing the number of copies. Okay, so, well, again, just to have things around, we'll define, I remove the tilde. Now, once we have a regularized quantity, it's sort of natural to see what happens with n going to infinity. It's sort of a natural setting. And in this case, delta infinity coincides with I infinity, since they differ only for a constant divided by n. So what we'll be actually looking at from now on is I infinity, which is indeed interpretable as the average amount of correlations per broadcast copy in the asymptotic scenario. So just saying, okay, given each copy, how many correlations do you have to share each time? And now something strange happened. The other time when I'm back. Let's have to say separable states. And, well, it's interesting that a possible broadcast state is a state of this form. But if I consider the IN, mutual information, well, this particular part, it actually coincides, well, it's less or equal than the, of course, the IN of this guy here, since this is the minimum. So it clearly goes to zero as n goes to infinity. So what happened is that we started from a measure of quantumness, and now we end up in something which is zero for all separable states. And so it's sort of, when you have something that is zero for all separable states, well, start thinking about entanglement measures. So what is an entanglement measure? Well, it's some functional from a set of states to positive real numbers, which should vanish on separable states. And should essentially, at the very least, a condition called weak multiplicity. So it's non-increasing under a loose C. Actually, there are other conditions, or stronger ones, but this is sort of the very minimal requirement. Plus, well, often convexity is applied. Additionally, it's been there, it sort of simplifies calculations. Well, for the moment, we know that our infinity satisfies the first condition, so it sort of comes natural to see what happens with the others. Well, you can actually prove that our infinity as it's defined is monotone under a node. This is sort of follows trivially from the monotonicity of the mutual information. And, well, less trivially, you can prove that it's monotone under an OCC if you have initial pure states. Unfortunately, though, the general statement hasn't been proved yet. So, as we're saying, from your entanglement on the way back, this is a candidate entanglement measure, but we still haven't any clue of whether or not it's going to satisfy weak monotonicity in general. Seeing the next slide, that even if it does not prove to be an entanglement measure, it would give rise to some interesting results. Okay, moreover, well, it does satisfy convexity, which is sort of tricky because mutual information is neither convex nor concave, but sort of getting the regularized thing over to infinity, you get that. You get convex. Another nice property of high infinity is that actually it lies between two known entanglement measures. These pandemics are called Q-squash entanglement and C-squash entanglement. Now defined, well, by means of the conditional mutual information. And this determine is taken over all extensions of rho. And in the C case, in the classical squash entanglement, you're restricting yourself to classical extensions of just a rho. The nice thing is that it is unknown whether these two quantities coincide or not. They do coincide on pure states, they do coincide in certain cases, but in general it's not known. So, well, if we prove that we haven't gone back to entanglement, at least we prove that these two entanglement measures are not the same. Okay, another thing that sort of recalls the behavior of entanglement is, well, something related to the monogamy, or correlation to monogamy and entanglement. So what we have seen is that if it was a separable state, we have correlations that seem to be freely shared among all the copies. In some sense, okay, this is sort of an extreme picture. We have just one line of correlations between the two guys, and then Alice and Bob just prepare multiple copies of their own people. But so they don't really need to share correlations for each copy. That's in the cell. But on the other hand, if I consider a correlation due to entanglement, then there sort of seems to be some sort of monogamous behavior. In that, it seems to be that there has to be some sort of finite amount of correlations per each copy. Okay, this is sort of the asymptotic case where you have a product statement. So, okay. So in that sense, it sort of seems that correlations have some sort of monogamous behavior that recalls what happens. The last thing, up to now, I've only talked about the bipartite case, but if we define the monotonic quantum mutual information this way, then you find that all the results can be generalized to the multipartite setting. Delta tilde 2, with this new definition of the quantum mutual information, becomes a measure of quantumness for multipartite correlations, and our infinity is a candidate for multipartite information. Okay. We've introduced a measure for the quantumness of correlation, which is, well, it sort of derives from the concept of local broadcasting. It's zero for all states that are sort of quantum states of classic registers, and is greater than zero for separable non-CC states and even more for entanglement. We have shown that it's possible to compute this measure for at least some classes, or at least one non-trivial class of states. And we have discussed the role of entanglement, shown how to go towards entanglement again by deriving a candidate entanglement measure from the quantities you had defined to measure quantumness, and showing that there is a sort of copy-copy monogamy for at least some entanglement states. Now, there's a bunch of open questions. I'm sure you can come up with more. Well, we have seen that quantumness increases under a node, so it's from CC state to a separable state. But at least in that case, or in some cases, you can prove that this corresponds to also a decrease in the mutual information. What is still unknown is whether actually this trade-off is going to be always that. So it's sort of quantumness, something that is balanced by imaging deformations. Okay, this is more of an exercise. So can you actually compute I2 or even IK for some other classes of state? For a subclass of the state I told you about, we have sort of a guess of how the IK should behave, but we can't prove it yet. Are there any applications for this measure of quantumness? So there have been other measures of quantumness, of correlation, that have been applied, for example, in the studying the correlation of some computational models, both by Steve and others. They have this discord applied to the DQC1 model. Can we actually use this measure, or related measure I haven't spoken about, in such a context? And of course, what are the other properties of high affinity? First, maybe of all, is it or not an entanglement measure? Is it always non-zero for entangled states? Could be nice. Thank you for your attention.
You touched on this. Any comments on the relationship between your measure and discord?
No, not this one. They have to find a related measure, which is, still measured quantumness, but is based on something more similar to discord, which is the information you get in the POVMs from the state. And in that case, it's sort of more clear. In this case, I don't know whether there is any direct relationship. That's actually one reason why we might be nice to see what happens with something like this on the problem they have.
So I think they behave very much the same way.
Well, at least in some cases, yeah.
Discord is zero only for CC states.
Yeah, I would guess so, yeah.
I think this problem is for CQ states. It depends. You define it first, it's not symmetric.
Yes. So it's the only discord is bidirectional zero only for CC states.
But CQ states.
No other questions? I think I'm going to get it.